Hello and welcome back to Hash It Up. This week I have Kelvin England on the show. He's co-founder and CEO of Dyson Labs. Kelvin, you want to go mine Bitcoin in space. How close are we to really making that a reality? Hash It Up, hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hash It Up.
Well, you know, we've got a couple different launch providers. We got a couple different avenues that we can take. But for all intents and purposes, I feel comfortable saying that, presuming that the launch providers themselves don't slip on schedule, then by 2026, we should have mining hardware in space.
2026, that's very soon. Okay, so tell me, before we get into the meaty details, Kelvin, where did Dyson Labs come from? Where did that idea come from? Maybe also use that as a chance to give the audience a bit of detail about yourself and why you focus on space mining.
Sure. So back in, I got started, really, I think my first like real space job was working at Blue Origin. I previously was I contracted for Virgin Galactic, but I never got a chance to work on the actual the spaceship part of their operation. I was still touching the aircraft portion of their launch system. So Blue Origin was my first time like really working on nothing but space launch vehicles. And while I was there, I got a chance to realize that like I was surrounded by really smart people. I actually met a few Bitcoiners while I was there. and one of the things that I had started to understand is the different types of like where the startup community is starting is building inside of the space industry. And I came to the same conclusion that a few other people did around 2024 after I had left Blue Origin, that Starship was really going to be a game changer. These heavy launch vehicles like New Glenn are really going to change the atmosphere, change the dynamic for what services are possible in space. And really, this is just a continuation of my mechanical engineering degree. Like, it's all about transfer of energy to different forms. And Bitcoin is obviously a very unique asset, but it changes, you know, any type of energy that we can think of to electrical energy to financial energy in a way that doesn't really exist in other systems. And it's just to me, it's like a combination of my two favorite things, space and Bitcoin, but ultimately, it does kind of also just seem like a natural extension of what Bitcoin is in terms of an energy-backed currency, if that makes sense.
Why do you say it's a natural extension of it?
I think this comes down to different standpoints with regards to how much, like where we're going to be building our power. There's a huge push towards solar energy. And, you know, I think it was something like 70% of the power that got stood up in America over the last year ended up being renewable energy. And the majority of that is solar. And that's because, like, I don't know if anybody has used like a solar panel, but it is amazing. Like, you just bring out this sheet outside and then suddenly, you know, you can charge your car battery or run a TV or run a radio or something like that. Like it is really odd to be able to do because the sun just, when the sun's not there, like hopefully you have like a battery storage. But it's a kind of a beautiful system that doesn't exist. It doesn't feel like any other type of system, at least to me. And the perks of being able to have something that's like so decentralized, like have the solar exactly like where the power is needed, being able to build it inside and use it in situ. I think that there's a lot of really interesting changes to our landscape that are going to come from that. But then ultimately, this same system exists in space today. So we have thousands of satellites in orbit. Each of them have their own solar array, and they're generating anywhere from, like, you know, 20 watts up to 20,000 watts of energy in direct sunlight. And it's always been a game of how do we use these watts for their most economic impact. And Bitcoin just represents another lever that we can pull on to continue increasing the value of those satellite constellation systems.
Plus, in space, it's all the time, right? I looked at your website a bit, of course, before we started a recording, dyson-labs.com. Anybody in the on the show watching this can now look at the show notes and find the link there as well. But that's something that I didn't really much think about, right? It's limited how much uptime you have with solar on Earth, unless you have a battery. But in space, if your satellite is rotating around the sun, obviously you have a lot more exposure to it. And then, so with we'll move to Bitcoin mining just now. But when you say there's always this question of how do we use the power the best, what does that usually entail? How do people talk about, I don't know, downtime or power times where they cannot use the electrical energy that comes from, that they turn from solar energy? Like, what is the question usually?
Sure. I mean, it depends on how specific your mission is that you're trying to accomplish with your satellite. So, for instance, on the Voyager satellites, like, these are like a really weird one-off satellite where we just shot these things into the middle of the the middle of deep space, and in comparison to most satellites, like, this is kind of a random thing to do, but on those satellites, even them, they have occasionally they go through these periods of having excess power, and what that means is that they don't have enough, that they're not running enough internal electrical systems in order to properly use the energy that they're creating they're creating through their RTG system. So what they end up doing is instead they shunt away that electrical energy. They close a metal, basically like a radiator system. They close the circuit on that, and they send electricity through it. So it's not really doing anything useful. It's just being exhausted as waste heat. But that type of system has proliferated through a lot of the space industry. So it depends on what your in what context, you know, you set up your system. Some people use heating pads to be able to keep fuel lines at temperature. Some people will do the same thing for their batteries to make sure that their batteries are staying at temperature. But some people just have like a straight up, like a radiator that they're just sending the excess to. And that represents an opportunity. Your satellite mission is more than likely going to have transients with regards to what it's trying to accomplish. Like, even Starlink is over, it's over the ocean at times, it's over the poles, and it's not going to be able to communicate with the same amount of people when it's over, like, New York. But they have to design for the capacity for when it's over New York. So you end up with these engineering margins that it's a game of arbitrage against those margins.
Okay, but how much of an economic problem is stranded energy in satellites today?
Well, today there's 100 megawatts of power in space. By the 2030s, this is going to go up to anywhere from 250 on the low estimate, which I don't think is right, up to 850 megawatts by the 2030s. SpaceX is launching a megawatt of power every 7 days. So, you know, that means in 1 year's time, they're increasing by 50 megawatts. So this is just, and they're probably going to increase with the advent of Starship. So, we're heading into a regime that is, it's kind of the Wild West. Like, there is no, we're not limited by regulation in space. We're not limited by the cost of land and bureaucracy. it's basically like how fast can people build things and send them up into an orbital lane where nobody else is occupying. And space pretty much self-evidently is very big. So there's a lot of room for us to build really interesting and cool things.
Okay. How do we start this? So I think the best way to sort of delve deeper here is to get into the three reasons as to why, or the three distinct problems that I guess Bitcoin mining in space solves, according to Dyson Labs. Do you want to start there?
Sure. And so I think that I've kind of touched on the first instance and the second instance in a way. And this mostly has to do with firstly, talking about satellite constellations. At the constellation scale, we have these periods of relative downtime with regards to power generation, where a satellite may be generating power, it may be living off of battery power, but it doesn't necessarily have, it's not going to be in a window where it can commit its primary mission. So for Starlink, this would be sending down, frequencies to be able to communicate with their phased array to make the internet work. So in the event that they don't have enough targets, they're not able to do that. So their satellite's still up there. So now, of course, they do have things like orbital inter-satellite links. So these are little terminals that are built on the satellites to be able to communicate with the other satellites that are in orbit. They can always keep that mesh together, but there's still going to be these relative downtimes where one satellite is not going to be doing anything else. And this exists basically across every type of satellite mission, where you're going to have these periods of time where you're not going to be able to do anything else, but you already have this power infrastructure built. And that's what we want to be able to build into. We want to be able to build Bitcoin mining as a system that, if nothing else is happening, if you're not generating any type of revenue, at least you would be able to do Bitcoin mining and be able to recover some of the launch costs from that. And one of the reasons why this is a pursuit of interest is that basically anything that people can do, if it only costs us $60 to build the circuit card to tack on a couple ASICs worth maybe 20 watts of power, you know, people are interested in exploring where they can put these in the most intelligent position around their satellite. If you have a fleet of 100 satellites, then that matters a lot. Secondarily, on the topic of heat, NASA actually has their number one civil technology shortfall for 2026 as surviving the lunar night. So this is a thermal challenge. Their number two problem is power generation. So both of these problems are inherently related to Bitcoin mining. There's been a lot of Bitcoin mining projects associated with both power and heat. So Bitcoin mining represents like a 10x step change in terms of efficiency with regards to regular resistive heating, because not only are we accomplishing the same amount of watts to watts transfer from electrical to thermal energy, but now we're also generating financial energy. And that becomes very powerful with regards to what we can do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to understand what the lunar night was. And then I wanted you to explain, because obviously we're not sending up shoebox ASICs up there with fans on them. What does the miner look like at the end? Like, is it just a board with chips on it? Those two questions I need to explain for the audience, please. BitX, solomining.de, got it. Premium, made in Germany. You want to go fancy? Go for NerdX or NerdQX++ for a lot of power. Worldwide shipping. Check out solomining.de today.
Sure. So the lunar night is, depending on where you're at the moon, the moon is tidally locked to the Earth, which means that the face that is facing the Earth is always continuously facing the Earth. And the dark side of the moon is always dark. But on the poles, we have these periods of shifting. So, and what that means is that if you build out towards the towards the hill caps, you can actually get into these periods of continuous sunlight on the poles of the moon. But beyond that, you have to be able to have the lunar day and night cycle is around 14 Earth days. So you have to prepare for these situations where you could end up in the wrong place, and you have you may have 14 days of sunlight still, but then eventually you're going to run into 14 Earth days of being in the lunar night. And what that means is that temperatures are going to drop down to around 100 degrees Kelvin. So for reference, like your room temperature is around like 270 degrees Kelvin, and the scale is the same as Celsius. So about 170 degrees colder than room temperature. So very cold. And electronics can fail at these temperatures. So the way that you be able to combat that is that you provide heating to those systems. So something like Bitcoin mining that you can have continuously running and be able to generate a revenue while it's running, it actually takes a small amount of wattage to be able to keep these electrical systems warm. But having an incredibly robust system with redundancy, like where you can still generate revenue the whole time, like this is Bitcoin, like it's and it will be any type of system that is only relying on resistive heating, so long as we have a very a latency tolerant and low bandwidth internet connection, which is that infrastructure is being built as well. So it's not like we're completely disconnected.
Yeah, the latency is something that I wanted to ask about. Okay, so talk to me about what the miner looks like. Like, what does this device look like in your head today?
So we have some designs. We're mostly working off of what the BitAx community has put together. So these are all open source designs. Admittedly, we are working with some that have not been released to the public yet, but they will be. These and basically they look almost virtually the same, except for our systems don't have a fan, and we're using thermally conductive materials to mount from the ASIC chip to the fan. We're going to be using thermally conductive materials to mount from the ASIC chip to the systems that need to be warmed with regards to thermal conduction. Or alternatively, if we build this into a system for the greater excess power that a system may be generating, building this straight into a radiator panel itself, such that the excess power just is emitted from the spacecraft at large.
Okay, going back to the lunar night, Calvin, something that I didn't think I would say ever. explain to me again why this cannot be solved today with just normal resistance heaters? I haven't understood that.
No, it can. It's just a matter of where your return is going to be. So nichrome heaters inside of polyamide, if you ever seen like the little heating pads, like they're in different industries, they get used for different purposes, but inside the space industry, they mostly are used to keep certain critical systems at temperature. Occasionally they're used just to be able to dispel excess energy as well. But these little nichrome wires are kind of a dead simple version of a way to be able to rid heat from a system. Now, with Bitcoin mining, like ultimately, like, is it a more complex system? Yes, it definitely is. We have a more complex, we're sending that same amount of energy through like very intricately designed circuitry. Most Bitcoin ASICs are designed in a way to not be tolerant, to not fail gracefully. So like they'll fail at the hashboard level, and then that entire hashboard goes down. I think it would behoove us to look into designing systems where we're redundant at the chip level, or at least the series of chip level, where just because we had a failure in one part of the board, it doesn't mean that the entire board fails. So this does represent like a little bit of a change in the architecture that we design our ASICs in the first place. But being able to have a system that is going to be able to generate its heat, even if the ASICs themselves die, there's different, we would have to figure out our left and right limits with regards to what level of redundancy we'll be building into our systems. But more or less, the space industry has accepted that triple redundancy is pretty run of the mill for a lot of these types of systems. So in the event that we have some sort of critical component that we have to provide heat for, we'll probably see three of these Bitcoin miners, like either at the board level or in some way redundant, strapped to be able to provide that thermal heat in the event of a failure.
And that's why you guys have Auradine's logo on your website. Because last time I talked to Sanjay on this show, he was also talking about, you know, solving that issue that if one chip dies, the machine just doesn't stop. It's just a little bit less hash rate, right? It's not a third of the miner going to shit. All right. So what I'm struggling still to understand, Kelvin, is the economic lens of this, right? There's so much funding in this industry. There's so much government funding also. How much of a dent does a bit of hash rate really make? And how does it stack up against all the additional capex that you need to spend on designing, delivering, and then essentially also sending it to space?
So there's different aspects of this. basically, the way that I try to frame this as simply as possible is that if today it costs $1,500 per kilogram to launch to space, and that would be like the internal cost for SpaceX, then if I can make a circuit card that generates more than $1,500 worth of value on the typical SpaceX mission, then if it generates more than $1,500 worth of value over the lifetime of a SpaceX mission, then it makes sense for SpaceX to pursue this as a technology. If alternatively I can't make it make sense at those values, then it doesn't make sense. However, SpaceX may charge around $5,000 per kilogram for the external cost today with just on Falcon 9, not talking about Starship. So at those prices, it's definitely like I think that you probably would have a harder time being able to make an economic product. However, because of things like New Glenn, because of things like Starship, we're going to see these figures come down. And what people are going to be charging internally or externally is definitely in flux, but the mathematics behind whether it makes sense for somebody to pursue this as an internal or external project kind of comes from there. And then beyond that, though, talking about a little bit of hash rate, like, if we were to launch just one circuit card, like, of course, this does not make sense. This is not an economic game. This is something that only really works at scale, but, you know, we have to start somewhere. And ultimately, you can talk about the idea of, like, doing a crowdfunded CubeSat launch that's, like, just for the BitAx community or just for whatever community ends up paying for it. And, like, that is very cool. And maybe you mine in the meantime, and there's like an associated like ordinal or some kind of crazy thing associated with that. But really, the economics, like the pure business sense of this, comes down from those huge operators at scale.
Okay, so how long is a mission? You just said.
I'm sorry. How long is the what?
So you just said, right? It depends on the length of the mission. And during this time, you have to make that economic value happen. How long is a mission?
It can be anywhere from 5 to 7 years, is about standard for LEO satellites today.
And so how much hash rate do you think today with existing chips you could fit on a board to ship up there?
A typically ASICs today will pull about 5 kilowatts of power. The vast majority of that is going to be inside the hash boards. They're going to have 3 hash boards inside typically. So, you know, whatever that ends up being, like maybe you end up with like 1,300 kilowatts of hash power or 1,300 watts of hash power on a single hash card. That's going to fit within a space of like maybe, like a foot by a foot, something like that is like the size of most miners, let's say. We actually end up in a different regime with regards to this because space is weird. You're generating the power on these solar panels. So these solar panels generate about 200 watts per square meter. Maybe 300 watts, but typically around 200 watts. Well, we need to be able to, I think that there's, if we're going to put this product into satellites at scale, I think that we're going to see integration into those solar panels just because the way that you radiate heat is a problem, is a surface area problem. So if you're flat and you're facing the sun, that's a very good way to make something hot. If you're flat and you're facing deep space, that's a very good way to make something cold. So I can foresee a world where the Bitcoin miner is built into the solar panel, so that way it's always facing it, at least half of it is always facing the deep space, and then built in a designed in a way that it's built to radiate that heat away from the spacecraft into deep space. So you have 200 watts per square meter, and you need to be able to make a mass manufacturable circuit card that will fit into every panel of the satellite. And then the math becomes, can you do that at cheaper than $1,500 per kilogram for that circuit card? And just for reference, like one of those little bit axes with one or two chips, that probably weighs about 200 grams. And you can still add in more chips to that one circuit card with a relatively arbitrary weight gain. So I think that there's a good chance that we can do this, but the product does not exist today. So it's hard.
A BitX, a lot of the weight on the BitX is the stand and the fan and the copper pipe and the radiator, right? And the fan, like that's what's all the weight. The ASICs are not that heavy. And I guess if you put them on the solar panels, then you're not going to really heat any internal parts up, right? So then it just becomes a pure economic play to make the whole project more economical, right?
And on that note, the big thing that we've been able to see from some of the founder, like there's a guy named Brian Ignat who founded a company called Source Energy. Brian was also like the father architect of Starlink. And one of the things that he's talked about a lot is this idea that space companies, including Project Kuiper from Amazon, are moving towards using bulkier, heavier systems because they're more mass manufacturable. So with that in mind, that's kind of in the same line of our argument of being able to add these chips to be able to the mass manufacturability is kind of instead of arguing about that, it's more so about the cost savings associated with being able to mine instead.
You also talked to me yesterday, Calvin, about mining on the moon.
Let's talk about that. So I think if I remember right, the round trip time to the moon is around 2.5 seconds. To geo orbit. So like some of the highest satellites that we ever sent, that we send out, that round trip time, I think, is closer to 600 milliseconds. So just for,
and then hold on. What do you mean by that? What do you mean 2.5 hours?
Round trip time, meaning how long it takes us to send something and then receive it back with regards to the speed of light. So
a signal, you mean?
Yes. Like an EM wave or electromagnetic wave of some type. So either a laser communication or radio frequency communication. Typically, I think if I remember right, it's around a 2.5 second round trip time for us to be able to talk to the moon. So that is a lot of latency. That's more latency than most Bitcoin systems have to deal with. But we have a 10-minute average block time. So really what we're looking at is we'll lose about 2.5 seconds out of every 600 seconds of mining. So the ding that you take in efficiency is actually quite small. But because you end up in these positions where you can have 24-hour exposure to the sun, you gain a lot for the free for the you know, relatively free once you get there energy.
Okay. And then it's also an anchor tenant on the moon, right? Once the ASICs are there, it becomes
an
anchor tenant. So a first customer when you have nobody else to sell electricity to.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Like here yesterday when you started talking about your experience in Mali, setting up a power generation site and then not having customers to be able to use that power while you build out the transmission. There's CapEx associated with being able to put up mining, yes, but there's CapEx associated with being able to put out transmission in general and being able to find those other customers. Everything takes time. Bitcoin represents an immediate use of this this power that is a and it's also very, very unique. And it gives us the opportunity to say Bitcoin's going to the moon, which is I think very powerful in and of itself. But if nothing else, this does represent a regime change where instead of just using resistive heating, the idea of using compute for that resistive heating is very powerful. The Bitcoin mining community is already exploring this. I don't think other forms of computing have yet, but the implications are pretty far reaching.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
And what's the lowest hanging fruit for Dyson Labs? Is it resistive heating elements and adding value that way and the Luna Night that you mentioned? Or is it integrating ASICs with solar panels? Like, what do you think right now is the lowest hanging fruit that you go after first?
It kind of depends on your viewpoint. So we kind of have to do everything simultaneously. There's three aspects of this. So on the R&D side, the government will pay you to be able to do all these interesting things, particularly on the moon. Like I said, NASA's number one civil technology shortfall, they want that gap to be filled. So they're willing to be able to pay grants for companies like us to be able to do this research. So depending on how well we propose our solution, we could be looking at over $1 million across the span of 18 months using a device called a SBIR, an SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research, to study this for NASA. Beyond that, the low-hanging fruit with regards to the commercial world is this idea of tackling resistive heating, maybe looking at the solar panels design as well. But I know that satellites are using resistive heating. So just being able to find that first person who's willing to say, you know what, go ahead, stick a Bitcoin miner in here. To be able to, and just get some numbers to see like, hey, where do we sit? How economic or uneconomic is this really? And then finally, the thing that I haven't really touched on, but it's that fourth bullet point with regards to low-hanging fruit. And this is kind of a, this is unrelated to Bitcoin mining, but it is very related to Bitcoin in general, is the idea of being able to use systems like the Lightning Network to let satellites pay for themselves. And this is something that we haven't necessarily, we've only just started diving into this, but I can say that our commercial partners are very receptive to this idea. Satellites are supposed to be autonomous systems, except for today when you get into the business development cycle of what this looks like. So when people are arranging these demos, it's a long business cycle. People are making handshake deals in back rooms, and it's not a very open market. Specifically using the example of data, if we know that I'm on this side of the earth and you're on this side of the earth and the ground station over here, it can talk to both of us, there's this arbitrage that can happen between who's generating what data and where, and being able to sell that data between these two satellites and the ground stations. And ultimately what we're exploring right now is being able to put lightning nodes on satellites and being able to run the transaction layer through the satellites. Now, this all sounds very, why does the blockchain need to be involved in this? Well, the reason why is that agentic AI and model context protocol is giving an interface between the agents that are on board these satellites into their corresponding wallet. So let's say that you give your satellite $100,000 to be able to use as efficiently as possible with regards to its data transmission. Like if it has a large enough data set trained against it to be able to use that money more efficiently than the business developer who's sending, who's manually making handshake deals with other companies with regards to data routing, like that becomes very relevant. But we're trying to build an in-orbit economy for the 21st century that's going to consist of activities like refueling in orbit and Delta V operations, where one satellite grabs another and moves it to a different orbit. And in space manufacturing, where there's going to be certain resources exchanged between different satellites. So it is very, this is definitely like kind of I think the data routing aspect is really the most immediate payoff, but this in-orbit economy has to be done without people in the loop. We need to be able to do this as quickly as possible. And so Bitcoin is machine money. Let's make it machine money, though. It we have to build it.
Yeah, 100%. Why do you think, and maybe I'm wrong with this assumption, but why do you think that people in the space industry are receptive to Bitcoin in general and Bitcoin?
Oh, money? They're not. I'll tell you, okay. They're not. You know, as soon as I bring up Bitcoin, most of the time, you know, it takes a very particularly open-minded group of people to be willing to work with the Bitcoiners. And I will say that I think I've found all those people, though. But beyond that, like if being able to express to people like, hey, I can settle transactions for you outside of Swift, like that immediately to these people, that is value add. So there is like definitely contextual reframing that I have to do depending on who I'm talking to. But there are some people inside the space industry who are loyal to and who understand and abide by like the Bitcoin principles. Like in particular, like real quick, I just want to shout out Astrobotic, who they did the first mission for a commercial lunar lander. Unfortunately, that mission failed, but they had on board two Bitcoins projects, both the Genesis block that was inscribed on a tablet and a physical Bitcoin carrying one Bitcoin that was on board. So we've been kind of talking to them about the moon mission because they're Bitcoiners and they get it. This community is, you do have to know who you're talking to and how to frame it for sure. I definitely leave Bitcoin out more often than not, but you know, I think eventually people will come to respect like this is the how the sausage is made, so to speak.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere. Calvin, you guys are raising funds right now, right? If it's not from the space industry, because they don't get it, who are you trying to raise funds from, and what are you raising for specifically?
Sure. So one of the things that we're exploring is the idea of launching bit access to space. So these will be small CubeSat style missions. We expect that the cost will be anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million for us to be able to build, develop, license, and launch this mission. We're probably going to be crowdfunding this. So in the event that if we get 100 Bitcoiners who are on board, like we've got some different perks depending on how much people are willing to put in for this. But in the event that people are, you know, if we've got some guy out there who's a space nut and who wants to fund this mission themselves, like I've got some connections inside the space industry, so we've got different things that we can accomplish. Like we'd have a tour put on for them. We'd be able to that we're working with one of our partner companies that was somebody that I met while I was at Blue Origin called Ashes to Space. So in the event that they want to be cremated and have their ashes sent to space after they die, like that's something we can also look into. Like ultimately I think this idea like space is starting to democratize in a way that is really it's going to start touching more of our lives, and I'm really thankful. I'm very lucky to be in the position that I'm in, and but now I got to figure out how to onboard the Bitcoiners. Like this matters a lot. So you know, these CubeSat missions, they're probably not going to be very economic, but like you know, simultaneously,
But they're
man, like
fun.
they're very fun. You're putting your name in space. Like it's
And
a
Calvin,
pretty
I
unique
think
opportunity.
you're hitting very good timing, because right now Bitcoin seems very boring. Everybody's expecting this bull run. It's not really coming, you know. So it's definitely good timing. Quickly explain what CubeSat means, because I don't understand it. And
Sure.
yeah.
There's different classes of satellites. So a CubeSat is a it's actually a European Space Agency standard that's proliferated. But it's a 10 by 10 by 10 centimeter is 1U CubeSat. So a 3U CubeSat, which is probably about the size that we'd be targeting in this case, would be 30 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters. And these are just the building blocks of a very small class of satellites. So you can go up to 12U, 24U even. But most of these, the launches and everything around that is standardized. So if I say 3U to somebody in the space industry, they know exactly how to fit me into their launch platform.
Okay, but explain that to me. That just basically means you have 3 U's of space on a satellite.
Yeah, so 1U is in this case it would be its own self-contained system. So it would be around it like a kind of a rectangular prism, like
Okay.
this. And it's like a log basically that we'd be able to communicate with while in orbit. The bigger satellites, typically those are referred to as small sats, ironically, because they are very big. But it's just a standard that we use to be able to communicate interfaces and other things.
Okay, and then in the beginning you said 2026. If you raise this money, let's say you had the $1 million tomorrow, is that the timeline, 2026, or does it take longer?
Sure. So the that money today, commercially, like. We have to separate out what we're trying to accomplish commercially with what we would be trying to accomplish via the Bitcoiners. I will say that both of the price ranges end up being about the same thing. In the event that we had a crowdfunded launch, this is going to take a lot more in-house development from our side to be able to accomplish. So what I mean by that is that the CubeSat missions have, we would have to own communications, so we would have to have things like FCC and ITU licensing, So this allows us to talk over different countries with radio. And this is very expensive and time consuming. It can take about a year just for that. As well as we'd want to make sure that our system's not going to fail in orbit. So there's a lot of testing that we would have to do to make sure that we can survive the harshness of space. I expect that the first mission would probably cost us $1 million for a CubeSat mission, and then follow-on missions would be in the around $500,000 at that point. So, in the event that we had multiple missions, it would probably take us 2 years to develop from the ground up, and then from there maybe our pace could accelerate from there.
Interesting. All right, Calvin, to close out, we're going to do a quick rapid fire round. And then I would ask you to please give people a handoff, tell them where to find you, and give them a bit more details on the race. Okay.
Yeah,
Ready?
absolutely.
All right. Number one, would you rather host miners on the moon or in low Earth orbit?
I think that the best economic case is in low Earth orbit today.
If you could launch one ASIC model or one efficiency, one manufacturer into orbit, which would it be?
I don't want to show, ooh, I don't want to show allegiances to anybody here or nothing, but ultimately, I think that ooh, Block or Auradine, either one of those guys are
Okay.
have a
All
special
right, all
place
right,
in
all
my
right.
heart.
Would you rather launch miners on SpaceX or build your own rocket?
I think the time I may have missed that deck that that train by about a decade, so I think that we're going to be building no rockets yet, at least.
Okay, maybe in the future. Power source of choice, solar, nuclear, or something we have not invented yet?
Ooh, that's interesting. I do think that there's a lot of really weird niche energy devices that haven't been explored in space, but think on mass. I'm going to go with solar.
Cool. Give people a handoff, tell them where to find Dyson Labs, and tell them what you're raising or how
Sure.
much.
So we're raising $1.5 million on a safe at a $10 million valuation for our pre-seed round. And to learn more, you can reach out to us at dyson-labs.com. Dyson-labs. And my name's Calvin. Jesse, thank you so much for your time. This is wonderful. And I'm really hopeful that I can get Bitcoiners engaged in the space industry with this company and really make this next decade make it an orange one.
My pleasure. I hope to contribute in some way to give this more attention. And when you're closer to raising funds or starting your own thing, owning the communications, then we should speak again and give you an update, or you can give me an update. Right. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
your time, Kelvin. All the best to Florida. Cheers, man. Thank you. Bye.
Jesse, thank you so much.